How many of you, I imagine most of you have, on that big blue banner we have down on one of the cabins, and it has a statement in it. Many years ago, when we were trying to figure out what to put on that big giant banner, we had a hard time figuring out what to do and what to say. And so that psalm, that phrase, Baruch Haba Hashem, we have put the word Adonai there, but it's Yahuwah, or Yahweh. And it comes from Psalms. I don't want to turn you there. Just want to tell you where it's going to be, because I want to come to a point before. Each one of us come from a different kind of a background and different kind of learning. We have learned different things and different viewpoints and different, shall we say, I call them understanding of the scripture rather than just interpretation. Some of us had interpretation, but sometimes there are someone who has an understanding. And there are those views that are sometimes, those lot of views are quite different than mine, but doesn't mean that mine is right and theirs is wrong. Doesn't mean that theirs is right and I am wrong. Just that many things can be heard from one another. And that's why we are here at the Feast of Tabernacles, right? To hear and understand what each other has a thought, but necessarily not an opinion. And so the Word of God has a lot of different ways. No one man could be able to put all of that in their brain and figure it out, because God doesn't work that way, does he? Multitudes of people. There's a multitude of wisdom and more people than just one or two people. So we begin to listen to one another and we try to hear one another. We know that this particular point, you have heard me talk before, and this is about what's called the ingathering. It's the last of it, and it's the great ingathering. It's the last time, and it's called the seventh month, what they were makes up of the Feast of Trumpets. We'll talk about a little bit about that today, and Atonement, a little about that today, and then it talks about the great ingathering that lasts for 7 days. Quite a big gathering when you really stop and think about it. And when some of you who were here, hearing what Daniel had to say in that book of Numbers about the different kind of animals, you learn that, look at what the meaning of the word came from and the ground or the verb that actually started from. It kind of helps you to explain why they are there. And we both learn, all of us learn, there were two different kind of bulls. I thought it was very, very fascinating to know there was a difference. And it kind of helped explain something. In our world that we have lived in and are living in, there's certain things the Messiah said. And we have to kind of look and see, how does that fit into this huge picture called the Feast of Tabernacles? You don't have to turn there. I'm just going to rattle off a couple of things, all right? This is Matthew 23, verse 37. And he says, O Jerusalem, O Jerusalem, which killed the prophets and stoned them that are sent unto you, how often would I have gathered thy children together, and even as a hen gathers her chickens under her wings, and ye would not. Behold, your house is desolate, left. It's worthless. For I say unto you, you shall not see me henceforth until you say something. All of us mostly know what it says, right? Blessed is he that comes in the name of Yahuwah. Now turn to Psalms 118. As you know, and I hope some of you have learned from Jeff, that when in the Bible it's a phrase, a one-liner, like that one, you better go back and find out, what did it involve? Was this a thing of a curse, or was this a thing of a blessing? What do you think? Now, for you who have not heard me read before. I have a dyslexia problem sometimes, and I may stumble on a word and not figure out what it says because it becomes cluttered to me. So I'm going to be reading it as slow as I can so I can read it. How's that sound? All right. Give thanks to Yahuwah, for he is good, because his mercy forever. Let Israel now say his mercy forever. Let the house of Aaron now say his mercy forever. Let those who fear Yahuwah now say his mercy forever. That's how this psalm begins. Now, it's very odd. Why would this psalm begin with mercy? And then we have this one-liner that Yahshua said, I will not come until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Really? Let's find out more in detail of what the background of 118 is really all about. Listen to what it says. I called upon Yahuwah in distress. Yahuwah answered, answered me in the broad place, open place, large place. Yahuwah is on my side. I will not fear. What can man do to me? Yahuwah is for me among those who help me. Therefore, I shall see those who hate me. Therefore, I will see those who hate me. Now, do you think David is saying this? Doesn't say David wrote this psalm, does it? It probably maybe come from Solomon. He wrote an awful lot. He actually wrote more psalms than David did, but they don't say these are from him. So we don't know exactly who really wrote this psalm. Verse 8, better to trust in Yahuwah than to put confidence in man. Better to trust Yahuwah than to put confidence in princesses, leaders, ones that we have. You know, we're running into an election here coming up. If you have confidence in the election, regardless who you're going to vote for, makes no difference. Don't have confidence in them because they cannot bring about something. But I'm not talking about the United States of America here in this case, because the psalm's not about us. It's about an individual who is saying something. Verse 10. All nations surround me, but the name of Yahuwah, I will destroy them. So now we have who is speaking here, don't we? We have the Messiah speaking. These are the words what he is going to do. Because this didn't happen in David's life. Verse 11. They surround me, and they surround me, but in the name of Yahuwah, I will destroy them. Does this sound more like the time of the Feast of Trumpets? Pretty powerful stuff, isn't it? And he says now, they surround me like bees, swarms. And they were quenched like a fire of thorns. For in the name of Yahuwah, I will destroy them. Did you notice how the name of Yahuwah, the name of Yahuwah, the name of the Lord, the name is repeated several times? So keep those things in mind. The first part of this psalm was about mercy forever, mercy forever, mercy forever, mercy forever. It's a really odd statement to open up a psalm, and then all of a sudden you got this, I will destroy them in the name of the Lord. Now, they push me violently that I might fall. But Yahuwah helped me, or helps me, and Yahuwah, my strength and song, and he becomes my salvation. Do you think that Yahshua actually looked for his Lord? Do you think that Yahshua, Jesus himself, actually looked to the creator of heaven and earth as his salvation? Yes, he did. And in the Christian world, we think of salvation as a different word. But not in Hebrew. In Hebrew, he's going to deliver me from the enemy. Because that word in salvation in Hebrew does not mean save my soul. Save me from the war. I have to go to war. Save me from the destruction that takes place from the enemy, which we have heard already from this particular psalm, that they're swarming on him. Right? Verse 15. The voice of rejoicing and salvation in the tents of the righteous. The right hand of Yahuwah does something valiantly. Oh, really? The right hand of Yahuwah is exalted, and the right hand of Yahuwah does valiantly. Now, who is supposed to be the right hand of Yahuwah? Yahshua's right hand. But here he's saying, they're surrounding me, they're wanting to defeat me, they're coming against me with full throttle, full force. What does he say? I shall not die. Oh, that's interesting. He's not going to die in the war. I'm going to be alive. Did you notice that in Psalm 119 before? 118, rather? I find it very fascinating because we're going to lead up to his statement that is what Yahshua said at the time during the apostles to the city of Jerusalem. That one liner. Okay? And declare the works of Yahuwah. Yahuwah will chastise me severely, but he shall not give me over to death. Now, chastising sounds really bad. He has to be corrected. What does it say? I believe it's in Hebrews. I'm not quite sure. But it says that Yahshua learned by what? What he suffered. Now, what did he suffer? So, how could he be chastised by Yahuwah for doing what he was sent to do? Why was he chastised? So, and he had to take the beating from it. He had to take the correction on it. He had to take the chastisement on it. Blessed be God that he sent his son to do that, so we have life. Understand what I'm saying? We have to kind of pay attention because we know this is talking about somebody, quote, who is going to destroy the enemy. He's going to kill him, basically. And he said now, this is I like this part, verse 19. Open to me the gates of righteousness. I will go through them. I will praise Yahuwah. This is the gate of Yahuwah. What is the gate of Yahuwah? Righteousness. Oh. Through which the righteous shall enter. So when we have the gate, now Yahshua talked himself that he is the door. He is the gate, right? And through Yahshua, we're going to walk. Now, who gets to walk through that door? The ungodly? Who gets to walk through that door? The righteous. How do we become righteous? Chastisement was fallen upon him. Justification came, and it was solved. Now, righteousness. Now, that's why we just live in righteousness, not in transgressions, not in sins, not in a lust of our own eyes, lust of our own ears, and lust of our own lust of eyes, lust of flesh, and the pride of life. That's God. It should be dead and gone. And here's a very famous statement, verse 22. We all know it, right? And this quote is one of the pieces of evidence. The stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. This was Yahuwah's doing. Marvelous in our eyes. This is the day Yahuwah has made. We will rejoice and be glad. What day did he make? What is this psalm aiming at? What was the first phrase of that psalm? No, the first phrase that says is what? Verse what? Something is forever.
It's mercy.
Is forever. So now say Israel, his mercy is
forever.
Now say you sons of Aaron, his mercy is
forever.
Now you say, now those who are fear the eternal, say
his mercy endures
forever. It doesn't say endures. His mercy doesn't have to take any endurance. It is forever. That's been added in your translation. Okay? So be careful when we use that word. I mean, it's okay to use it, but be aware, his mercy is not in trial. His mercy is not in trouble. He doesn't have a difficulty giving his mercy out. It's there. Okay? Do you understand what I'm saying? His mercy endures, period. How long? Leolam. Do you know what Leolam really means in Hebrew? We use that word, Leolam, forever and ever. Do you know what Olam really means? Breaking it down. It means when you go over the mountain, then you will Olam. If there's a mountain in the way, you can't see what's beyond the mountain. So you climb the mountain, and then you see Olam. This old song we had, I don't know who sung it, and on a clear day, didn't see forever. In paraphrasing that, but once you climb the mountain, you will be able to see everything. Now, it depends which mountain you're going to climb. Come, let's go up to the mountain of the house of Jacob, the God of Jacob. So when we climb that mountain, what should we see? Everything. As clear as possible. So when we look at these things and try to figure them out, to see over the horizon, okay? Something's blocking our vision. All right? What's blocking our vision in your life? What is blocking your vision not to see Devarim Elohim's word? Oh, food, clothing, shelter, bad people, sin, transgressions, my neighbor, that dog-necked neighbor barking like crazy. I got a BB gun and blow his head off. You know, I can't do that. You know. So, you understand what I'm saying? Something can block you. And not talking about a mountain, but I'm saying that's where the phrase came from. So we go and we go and we say, what is blocking me? What happened to Saint? Boy, what a statement. What happened to Apostle Paul? He what?
What happened?
He what?
He was shipwrecked. He was beaten up.
Left
he was jailed. He was
tortured. People hated him.
Something fell from his eyes.
Scales.
All right. Scales fell from his eyes, and then what was he able to do? See forever. You understand what I'm saying? So when those scales from your eyes fall, you should be able to see. What are you supposed to look at? Bad things, wicked things, evil things. Oh, my next door neighbor's dog bugging me like crazy. No. What are you supposed to see? Devarim Elohim's word. He's talking to us. When the scales are dropped, it blinded Paul. Actually, it blinded. Then the scales dropped. So when God comes along in your life and my life, he blinds us. Now you said, no, God doesn't blind me. Yes, he does. And when he re-blinds you real bad, what do you do? Broken and contrite spirit, he will not deny. So when I'm saying when he blinds you, like he did Paul became a broken, contrite spirit. He feared the Lord immediately. You understand what I'm saying? So let's go back here to Psalms 119. Where did I leave off at? I think I was... verse 25. Save now, I pray, O Yahuwah. O Yahuwah, I pray, send now... What? Prosperity. Blessed is he who comes in the name of... Now here with a famous statement, right? One-liner. And the Matthew. And how do we interpret that thing? Well, we'll have to go back to Psalms 118. And you see the things building up to that point? How many times has he said, in the name of Yahuwah, I will destroy them. In the name of Yahuwah, I will destroy them. His mercy is forever. His mercy is forever. His mercy is forever. And Yahuwah is always with me. So now we have a little bit different looking at it when the Messiah said this. And he wasn't referring to, would you please just say those words? No, this is a prophetic statement. Do I believe they will say it? Let me ask you a question. When do you think Jerusalem will ask that question?
Just before utter destruction.
They will not say it until there is utter destruction. Then they have to know. They'll come to understand and realize, now I have to repent with a broken and a contrite spirit. Pride is gone. Arrogancy disappears when the fear of the Lord comes upon you or upon me or upon anybody. Your pride is no strength. There is nothing there. You can't not defend anything. It is destroyed.
Nor do you want to.
But God has not removed our pride completely, has he? Because sometimes we get arrogant, don't we?
Yes.
John.
Yeah, I believe it's written where you're not to rely on the chariots and the like Pharaoh did, right? It's written.
Right.
So in a sense, we have Israel still relying on nuclear bombs.
Yeah, and so, that's typical, the ways of the world, okay, and not the ways of God. So, a lot of things are going to happen, and I'll get into Matthew in a little while here. I just want to get on to this. I'm almost finished with 118 rather. And he says now, where was I at? I'm sorry, what? 27. Elohim is Yahuwah, and he has given us light. Oh, when you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of Yahuwah, guess what you get? Light. Oh, is that like Olam? Do you get to see? The scales drop. Pride drops. Fear of the Lord builds up. Broken hearted. And then God says, I'll accept that one. Now, bind the sacrifice of the cord of the horns of the altar. You, my Elohim, I will praise you. My Elohim, I will exalt you. Oh, give thanks to Elohim, for he is good. His mercy forever. Okay, now, what does mercy mean in Hebrew? Okay, let's put it this way. Okay.
Favor.
Favor is a true translation of that terminology. We turn around and we say, it's given me mercy, for I don't have to pay for the sin and transgression. Therefore, the Father has sent his Son, and he's paid for my sin and transgression. Oh, that's mercy. But not in Hebrew. That's not what it's about. Favor. Prophecy says, blessed is the one whom the creator of heaven and earth honors. Wow. Would you like to be honored by him? Of course. But he said, wait a minute. I should honor him. Yes. How many of you have grown children? Do you honor your children? Yes, you do. You don't berail them. You don't push them down. You give them respect. You give them honor. And they're free to have honor back to you. Now, don't get the scripture messed up that I must honor him like my mother and my father. But we're not talking about what honor is. So we're looking at it. Do you understand so far? In 118, we got this far, right? Matthew. You could turn there. Matthew, the 24th chapter. I'm not going to go through everything in the Matthew because everybody has a their own personal belief system and what it means and this kind of doctrine, that kind of teaching, this kind of insight, that kind of whatever it is. I'm not going to go through all that because it would take, forever to try to remember what everybody thinks. I don't have that ability. I'm getting old. My brain doesn't last very long. Anyway. No, don't get me wrong. That's what I mean by that. I mean, that's sincerely. Where I work at, you know, I'm an engineer. They call me an engineer because I was an honorary one, but that doesn't mean anything. But there are some drawings that I drew up 40 years ago. I look at them and says, who drew that one up? My name's down there. What is this?
What was I doing?
What is it? Where's the goal? I don't know. So I have done an awful lot of, I got to find some piece of, where was it put? You know, and I had to go in the stupid computer, type it in, says, where it's used. Oh, it's used in that assembly. So, okay, I'll get a picture of that. Who drew this one up? Oh, it's me. Oh, no. So, you know, your brain, God didn't create your brain to remember everything. If he did, you remember every sin and transgression and wickedness you've ever done, and you would never have it ever erased. But God gave us a blessing to have it be completely erased from our mind and from our life. And now we can walk in righteousness. We can walk in that, go through that gate of righteousness. Because you can't walk to that gate. You've got all this stuff in your brain. You never make it. Not yet. Out you go. So we just got the hearing here in the last verse of 23. You know, blessed is he that comes in the name of the Lord, or in the name of Yahuwah. Matthew 24th chapter. The disciples and he went to the temple. Now it doesn't tell us what was happening. Whenever it has, when Yahshua goes to the temple, it's not like he goes to the synagogue. Remember? When we first started teaching, it was in the synagogues. He'd always teach in the synagogues, wherever city and town he was traveled in. He'd go into the synagogues. You don't go to the temple every Sabbath. But when he goes to the temple, it has an accentuation point. It's telling us something. Quite a bit of difference. The temple is where the house of God, the Messiah says, this is my Father's house. Didn't say that synagogue is.
What is
synagogue means the same thing as church. It's a cluster of people, a group of people. And generally it's pretty small, like ours, real small. It's not big, huge, giant cathedrals where 200,000, 300,000, 400,000 can sit into. No, that has nothing to do. The synagogue, it's a Greek word. I'm not quite sure exactly what it meant. She may remember what it means. But I think it means very closely to the word of what they use as assembly. What's a Greek word, not an English? Yes.
I mean, the temple had the sacrificial system, the courtyard.
Everything, yeah.
The holy place and the most holy place. Huge difference.
Huge difference.
None of those in the synagogue.
So when he's involved where he's at the temple, something is happening according to what is written in the Torah in relationship to something must be given unto the creator of heaven and earth. We went to the book of fourth chapter of Genesis, right? And there seemed to be a process up to a certain particular appointed time. That's where Adam should have been, but he wasn't. And I told you what that really says there in Hebrew. It doesn't say, where are you, Adam? It says, why are you not here, Adam? And the very same phrase was given to Cain. When he said to Cain, where is your brother? He didn't say that. He says, why is your brother not here? At the appointed time and a specific place where they're supposed to go and give their offering unto God. God, they had to, the temple was where you took your stuff to God, not where you're in your house and in your basement having a cup of coffee and the Lord comes down and says, oh, where's my stuff? He does that, does he? Yeah. No, you go to him. Right? Is that not a reflection of what we should do in our own life? Go to him. And they were there anyway. I'm not going to go too deep into that one. But they want to show him the buildings. Now, there's several things that are connected to a temple. Not just a place where sacrifice is going to play. A lot of things are attended or connected to or there because of the temple. And his disciples, it's a really something to think about. Why did you ask that question for? Don't you think he'd seen them before?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course. So what? Why were they asking that question? What were they... It wasn't that he didn't see them. Their approach was, see how beautiful this place is? And when you go to a place that you've been before, and you really like the way the place is built, and the building is attractive, and you see it, and then you walk through it, and all he says, did you see that? And, yeah, I saw it. Yeah. Oh, isn't that beautiful? Yes, that's beautiful. That's what their attitude was. It wasn't telling the Messiah, do you see these buildings? Yeah, he saw them. What did he say about them? I'm going to destroy it. Put it in that terminology. It's going to be destroyed. Now, the very interesting thing, when he said that, something else he said. Verse 4. Now, if you're there at the temple to doing something has direct relationship, offering something unto the Creator of heaven and earth, giving it to Yahuwah, giving it to the Lord, whatever you want to call it, they had fulfilled what they were to give. And now they're leaving that area. And when he said, I'm going to tear it down. Oh, really? He said, take heed. Why would he say, the building will be destroyed, all the buildings destroyed, and he says, take heed. Take warning. What's he warning them about? He says, don't be deceived. Oh, really? Deceived about what?
Like what's going to happen.
When I read this many years ago, I said, okay, if I was one of those disciples, and all of a sudden he said this, because you can't find it in the Torah, you can't find it in the prophets, those statements of phrase, you can't find the writings, right? All of a sudden he's saying something. Now the first thought would be, oh, come off it. And he said, no, don't be deceived, it's coming down. What would you think? The man you looked to, admired, heard, and you served with, you're part of, he's learning from him, and it's really, really hard to re-say. And he says, now wait a minute. Verse 20, the next verse. Many will come in their name. Oh, this is my name? Oh, I'm sorry, I got it wrong. See, I have a dyslexia problem. What name are they to come in?
Seventh-day Adventist. Worldwide Church.
Come on now.
They're going to come in a name. And they're going to use that name. Right? Now, whether that name is Yeshua or whether that name is Jesus is unimportant. Right? They're going to use that name.
Yeah.
Why would they use that name for?
Well,
what?
For authority.
Yeah, to deceive.
Yeah.
Watch this. Watch the pattern here. Watch the pattern of the 24th chapter of Matthew here for a moment. And I'll get on to the great ingathering. But I just want to see a pattern here that you must be careful what happens when they come and use my name and saying, Yahuwah, I am the Messiah, shall do something. Deceive them. And of course, you know, everybody's terrified. Oh, great, this guy's a preacher. That guy's a preacher. You have the name. You use the name. You use the preacher, 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 preacher. And you can become terrified. You become paranoid. Now, what gate do the righteous get to go through? The gate of righteousness. If you are a righteous person, you do not have to worry about somebody deceiving you when they use the name. If you know what righteousness is. And Psalm 119 tells you, that's the gate. Remember the Garden of Eden? Remember the story? How many gates were there?
One.
How could Adam and Eve ever get through that gate?
One at a time.
They'd be dead. Fire will kill them.
Go back through it.
Okay. Pretty nasty gate, isn't it? Right?
Oh, yeah.
Very nasty gate.
Sword, fire, lion.
Now let's drop down quickly to verse 10. Verse 10, Matthew 10, Matthew 24, verse 10. It's talking about the offense that's going to take place. Because of the deception, now someone's going to be mad. And then they shall be blessed.
Great.
I got it wrong again? Oh, offended. Okay. They got offended. Who got offended? Who got offended? Verse 2. The ones who were deceived. Let me ask you a question. Inside of your heart, inside your mind, inside your soul. If I can use those terminologies so you can understand what I'm saying. When you found out what righteousness really is all about, what was your immediate attitude? And be honest, don't tell me. Just I'd say, look inside yourself, right? What was your immediate attitude when you say, you know, that church lied to me? Guess what? You were offended. Accept the mere fact you were offended.
Uh-oh.
You were offended. Why? Because you were deceived. How were you deceived? By them using, or anybody else using, the name that you trusted in. You believe in, you have confidence in. And they use that name to lie. And all of a sudden, when it's all over with, and you look and say, boy, you know, that church almost wanted to curse it, but not quite, but maybe you did. And sometimes you get personally angry at this preacher or this minister who was your best friend. Or the one you look to for advice, one you look for counsel, one that really helped you out and your family out, one that married you, whatever it is. And then you say, you know, that guy lied to me. That means you're offended. Can you accept that part in your world? You were offended. Now, what are you going to do about it? Well, this is what's happened when someone's offended. Many will be offended and shall betray. Who's betraying now? The offenders. Do you understand that's how it's written? The ones who've been offended now are going to betray one another and hate one another. Accusations against one another. Attack one another. Okay? We say, well, that's not godly. That's not a Christian approach. Is Messiah just kind of making this up because he likes to make this up? Or is he telling us something the truth? Now, what I'm trying to get across here real quickly, if I can narrow it down here real quick. When you have been offended, you had an option. You could betray somebody. So it takes inside of you and inside of me an awful lot of turning the other cheek. Right? And so who do we go to find out who made that first statement? Who made that first statement? Do you remember? Turn the other cheek.
Jesus.
Who?
Messiah.
You know?
My grandma.
We're offended when we make someone an idol.
True, that's true. That's what happens. But no disagreement with that at all. That's what happens with people. But what happens when a person or an organization uses the name, and we see that they're using the name. That's wonderful. And they're deceiving.
Right.
Yes, the name is what you're listening to. The name is what is important to you. But their actions, you think they are telling you the truth. The Messiah says, no, they're not. That's what happened. Every human being does that. They're not a living human being. They've not put another human being in place of God. We put thousands of things in place of God. And the very commandment from the very beginning is, don't do this because I took you out of bondage. No, bondage. Yes, Egypt was a type, but bondage. When you are bound by, or you put into bondage by, some preacher or some church, you're in bondage. You're not free. The very first statement in the commandments tells you why he did what he did. It's not just something to say. I have freed you. Don't put anything else in front of me. Not a man, not a church, not a group, not a theology, not a religion, nothing. But we, since we're flesh and blood, we see with eyes. Well, we can see, touch, feel, smell. Okay, that's real to us. We have to get past that point. How do we get past that point? His mercy is forever. His fairness his favor is forever. When do you get his favor? See, everybody got a lot of answers, don't they? You kind of know what it is, right? One word says this, but you all are saying that you know what it's all about, right? Okay, now, so we're going to hear Devarim Elohim through Yahshua. And Yahshua is talking here. Yes?
You were asking everybody, who was the first one that said it? Was it Cain and Abel?
John. About turning the other cheek. Who's John? Which John? How many Johns are there? There's one up there. There's one over there. Any more Johns around here? John the Baptist said it first. Wow. The Messiah didn't say it first. We're off on a tangent. We're bird walking here for a moment. Yeah, some birds don't walk very good. I'm one of them. Anyway. Why was it important that John had to say it first and not the Messiah?
John was leading them.
His what?
To bear witness. John leading them.
Make ye way.
Make the way straight.
Make ye way straight for the Lord. Now, if you have been struck on the cheek, and he says, this man who is, which the Messiah said, no greater one has been born of a prophet than John. This man said, turn the other cheek. What would your response be if you lived back there in that time before you even knew there was such a thing as Jesus?
I would have been.
He said, you're crazy.
They're fishermen. That's right.
I'm going to head back. I'm going to defend myself. Whatever. But see. Okay, anyway, let's move on here. And he breaks down, and John brought this up in his message yesterday. I can't remember exactly where part he was, but he says, but he that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved. Saved from what? No. Saved from what?
The ridicule and the fool. Make the fool out of yourself.
Huh?
The deception.
You see the pattern? We just sometimes read it and says, oh, that means religiously. That's some kind of religious thing. No. If you endure to the end, you will be saved from all of those perverseness, the deception, and the betrayal. But if you've been offended, you've got to say, turn the other cheek. The Messiah didn't say that. John did. And these disciples, over half of them were disciples of John before they were disciples of Yeshua. So they knew what it meant. We look back and say, huh? See, they have a life. They lived. They understood more than perhaps you and I could possibly do so. Of course, he talked about the kingdom of God will come upon the face of the earth. So, then we talk about this great tribulation. I could go through detail on that at all. But in this story here in Matthew 24, he talks about a trumpet being blown. And you were at, those who were with me, we went through the Feast of Trumpets, right? And a certain trumpet is going to blow. When a certain trumpet blows, what's going to take place? One blast. Not, he didn't say multiples of trumpets. He says, when the trumpet, who gets to go?
The leaders.
Where do you find that?
In
where? What chapter?
Oh, man.
10th chapter. Numbers 10th chapter. That's very important to know. Now, if two trumpets are sounded, what takes place? Everybody. So, what does it mean when just one blows? And the opening night, when I dedicated this, and I prayed to God, and I told you, we did the water right here. By the way, you know, somehow, there's only 10 here. I wonder, is this the lost sheep?
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, I said, you will be part of the cleansing. Just as the disciples became apostles, and because what they did in their life, you now believe God. Right? Because you weren't there. Were you? Do you trust the apostles? We say, well, I'll trust no man. Oh, no, wait. Do you trust the apostles? They were the ones that were sent. Who sent them? Yeshua sent them. Do you trust Yeshua? Do you trust any man that Yeshua sends? Oh, my. Sort of?
That's right.
God said, trust no man.
Do you trust Devarim Yeshua?
Yes.
What more do you need to go? I sent them out, he said. Do you trust me? I sent them out. Do you trust me? Am I sending out a mistake? You don't trust me sending them out? Do you trust me sending them out? Yes or no?
No.
You don't trust the Messiah sending them out?
Well, yes, I do trust him sending them out.
So I'm saying!
Yeah. But we're to test.
I'm sorry, what?
We're to test these leaders.
But, and did they pass?
The guys that wrote it.
Did they pass?
See,
If you believe they didn't pass, why do you have a Bible for? Throw it in the river. Has no value. Cast it away. Throw it in the fire. I mean, why not? Right? I'm being kind of, blunt here. But yet, at the same time, who do you trust? Well, I trust Yahshua. Do you trust the actions of Yahshua? Do you trust the words of Yahshua? Do you trust his assignments of Yahshua? Do you trust him assigning somebody to do a task? Yes or no? If you don't trust Yahshua, then you have no trust. Period. What did Dave Sean say yesterday? Trust, or use the word faith. Trust is given to us. Who gave us trust? The Creator of heaven and earth. He's the one that drew or draws anybody unto his Son. There's not a church that can do it. There's not a man that can do it. There's not a flesh and blood. Not even a dog can do it. Not even a donkey can do it. They can't do that. Only one being can do that. So he says now, when the trumpet blows, something's going to take place. Where was I at? No, it's in Matthew 24. I just lost my place. Where was that? Okay, just a minute. Oh, yeah, 31st verse. 31st verse of Matthew 24. Now, what takes place? What does it say? Gather them together from where? You mean they're scattered all over the place? They're not of one huge, giant cluster of people in a very dedicated church? They're all over the place. When that trumpet blows, north, south, or actually east, south, west, and north, we'll hear it. I said this is my personal opinion. You can disagree with me on that one. When that trumpet blows, those who enter into the gate of righteousness will hear it. Those who do not enter into the gate of righteousness will not hear it. They're not supposed to hear it. Who's supposed to hear it? The righteous. And they are the ones that go through the gate. So you enter in through a gate called righteousness. Psalms 118 there. So he blows his trumpet, and now we have the beginning of what the Torah calls the great ingathering at the end of the year. We don't need to go through trumpets and all that. I mean, that's enough of that one. In Isaiah, I'm not going to go Isaiah 27. I'm going to quote two verses, I think. Yes, because I don't want to get you out here. You're cold and you're frozen. It's getting chilly. All right. No. Isaiah verse 12. In it shall come to pass, Yahuwah shall beat off the channels of the river into the streams of Egypt, and ye shall be. All at once? One by one. What did Yeshua say about the gate that's so narrow? In Hebrew it says that gate is very narrow. We also know from Proverbs that even Job's kids cannot enter in. Couldn't enter in. Wow. What other kids could not enter in? I can't remember them all, but Elijah's kids cannot enter in. Abraham's kids can't enter in.
No, they can enter, they just can't enter on the back of their parents.
Correct. Not on the righteousness of the parent. Has to be in the righteousness of what says there in Psalms 119. Through that gate of righteousness. Is that gate of righteousness a real easy thing to travel through? It is not. But His mercy forever. His mercy forever. His mercy forever. His favor. And we get into Psalms 118, rather. It's those who are righteous. So you have a function to do, don't you? How do you receive righteousness?
Obedience and not being offended.
Not being offended, yeah. That's a hard one, huh?
Favor.
How do you get favor?
Through the blood of Christ.
He just
wants to give it. He just wants to give it to you. Oh, really? Oh, no, that's an interesting statement. I'm going to have to come over here. I got one. It's a black book, you know. This one was thrown in the water. It was real thin at one time, and it got real fat. You know, that's what happens, you know. Now,
shrink.
I'm sorry, what?
It doesn't shrink.
It got bigger.
Yeah.
It's a funny story. You don't need to know about it, okay? Shoot. We know it by heart. We know it by heart. Where was I at? I think it's in the fifth chapter. Matthew, the eighth chapter. What? Boy, you're anxious. He's got his computer thing. Get out. There it is. Me, I have a book. I have to open it up. Where is it? You guys with your modern electronic things, what's going to happen when the battery goes dead and you can't get no more power? You better hang on to your written Bible. At least you got something to hang on to. Hey, I get to harass people for this because in my old days, how did I learn to read the Bible? In one book computer. A lot of books, read, throw a lot about, no good. I spent a lot of money to figure out what it had to say. All these guys had worthless stuff to say. I didn't know it, but after I read it, so yeah, it's worthless. Get rid of it. Verse 21. Not everyone who says unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of God. Not everyone that says unto me, now he's not saying, you got a different God over here. No, he's talking about Yahshua himself. Himself. All right? And he says, enter into the kingdom of heaven. How do you enter into the kingdom of God, by the way? 21.
Matthew 7.
Oh, 7. I'm sorry. 7. That's true. I'm sorry. 7. You know. I'm old. They follow my brain. I don't remember. Anyway. So what we're looking here is what? How do you get, quote, into the kingdom of heaven? Well, let's listen to what he says. Listen to what he says. You want to know how to get righteousness? Because remember, the righteous go through that gate of righteousness. Okay, let's talk about this for a moment. Not everyone who says unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of God. They can't enter through that gate. You won't make it. But he who does something. Is that different? Obeying him in your world, in your, why would you do something for somebody?
Because you love them.
What if you don't?
You get paid sometimes.
It doesn't mean.
What if you don't?
You can obey without love.
Yep.
It's not talking about obedience.
No.
What's it talking about? The will of my Father. Do you know the will of the Creator of heaven and earth? He shouts about it from Genesis all the way in. Can we say, I don't know what God's will is? Hey, it's written. What does he want to do?
He wants you to love him.
Do what is upright. Do what is decent. Do what is good. Prophecy all over the place with those three statements. Do what is right. Do what is good. Do what is... He's not talking about love. That's not what it says. Do what is good. What is good? We went to the book of Cain. I mean, the story of Cain. What did the Creator say unto him? If you done well, you would be accepted. And we think, oh, wait a minute, he disobeyed. No, that's not what he said. I didn't accept your offering because you're not doing well. If you were doing well, I would have accepted it. And we have an interpretation from all different kinds of people. Says, well, he's a wrong one. He gave the wrong interpret. He should have given the blood sacrifice like Abel did. All that kind of stuff. Abel's more righteous because... No, why was Abel more righteous? He's called righteous. He wasn't called a saint. He did the will. He did the will of the very one that built the garden. Cain didn't do will. And guess what happened? It's very important to go back in that Hebrew to see what's going on and not try to interpret it in any other way except just says, if you do will, would you, not your offering, would be accepted? That's what it says. It doesn't say, your offering I don't like. No, you. You're the one I want. You're the one I want for it to be well. But he didn't. So let's continue on here in Matthew. 7th chapter, okay, and verse 22. Many will say to me in that day, what day?
The day of the Lord.
Lord, Lord, have we not done something? Oh, we prophesied. We used your name. Now, you remember what it says there in Matthew 24? Many will come and use my name. They did. And have we not done many wonders in your name? Did you notice that? And Messiah in 24th chapter says, they'll come and use my name to do what? To deceive. And I'll declare to them, I never. Those are pretty strong words, don't you think? It doesn't say, well, once you were, but now you're not. It's, I've never will declare. I never knew you. Get out of my life. Get out of my face. Be gone. Put in our English terminology here. So how do you get righteousness? Verse 24. It's the will. It's not just, oh, I gotta obey. I'm feared, I'm scared, obey. I'm scared. No, do the will. What is the will of the Father? Do that which is right. Do that which is proper. And the Torah is full of what is right and what is proper. We don't understand what is right. We don't know what is good. We don't know what is bad. We don't know what is good. But there is a creator who said, I have written it. It's there for you to read. This is what I want you to do. This is the good. This is the just. This is the holy. This is what I want you to do. Okay? Therefore, whoever hears these my sayings and does them, I will liken it to a man who built his house upon a rock. Now, in the book of Luke, it says, down deep into the ground, the rock. All right? And guess what's going to happen? Oh, Bill. I'm sorry. Did you have a state question?
It says, they said they were casting out demons in his name.
Correct.
If they're not believers or saved, how can they do that?
Simple.
Or if they're not using it, or if they're
simple.
Using,
they're just using his name. The demons know who it is.
So they can still use his name and not
yes,
be saved?
Yes, you could get, no, not, that's the word not be saved. They're not going to be, they're not walking in righteousness. Okay,
yeah,
they're still violating what his father had written back way back in the book of Genesis. I mean, you know, Genesis and onward. Yes.
Judas had the power to draw.
Correct.
And he was not saved.
Well, half question on the thing about saved. He was not, I mean, he killed himself for a reason. But we won't go there today. It's a different subject matter, okay? That's a man who turned against the will of Messiah's father. That's very clear in the book of Ezekiel. Three generations involved. The first one does the will. The second one doesn't do the will. The third one does the will. Which one enters into righteousness? Just the grandpa and the grandson. The other one doesn't. Did he know the will of God? Yes. He just didn't do it. Now I'm talking about the will of God, not the commandments that puts a burden upon you. Now, understand what I'm saying? Never mind. Forget it. Throw it out. If you don't understand that thing. And he says something about what's going to happen to you and me and to the one who must be tested all the days of his or her life as they enter in and want to enter into that gate of righteousness. What's going to happen to you? And you did not fall. Has there been hard times for you? Okay.
I'm over here, God.
I'm going to talk to you about in Matthew 24, I mentioned about something. Remember what I said? They come in my name, and they're going to do something. They're going to deceive. And they keep on going down the 10th verse. And he says, and then something's going to happen to those who are deceived. They're going to be offended. Okay, wow, that's pretty heavy stuff, isn't it?
We got laws like that now.
We do.
Hate law. You've offended somebody.
No, that's not an offense. That's an artificial law that has nothing to do with the creator of heaven and earth. That's man-made stuff.
Yeah,
it's going to burn and go into hell and no longer exist, okay? Man gets no credit, in my mind, for any law he writes. Not saying we shouldn't have laws, don't get me wrong. But they're not lasting ones. Because they're not based on what is right, what is just, what is good. Based upon what man wants it to be. And we live in a society, you must obey the law. Obey, 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 obey. So we instinct, oh, obedience, 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 obedience. Okay, it's hammered in our head day and night. But here we see the will of my father. What is his father's will? What was his father's will, quote, before the flood? End of quote. Do you know?
All that you do, we will say, we will do.
No, it's not what it says there before the flood.
Oh, no.
There's only eight people. So what do they believe?
Noah and his family.
Noah and his family. They believed. Now, I want to get up. The Christian terminology of faith is a very poor word. It's trust God. They trusted him. How do you know that Noah trusted God? He built the ark. He didn't go out to Africa, bring a bunch of cows in or a bunch of bulls in. He didn't go out all over into ancient Minor and bring in some. They all came to him. God brought them all to Noah when the ark was ready. Noah didn't have to go out and hurt anything. Did Noah believe God when God said that? Yeah, he believed. He trusted him. So when we talk about the will of God, and Jesus said in another place, I think it's the book of Luke, if you know the will of my Father, then you will know my work that I do. Now the Pharisees, and with inside yourself, were they the ones that obeyed the Sabbath? Were they the ones that obeyed and did the holy days? Were they the ones that obeyed beyond measure? Because the Messiah, I think it was in this previous chapter, said, your righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees. He didn't say, your righteousness must exceed the crap, the lousy stuff, the damnable stuff of the Pharisees. He said, the righteousness of it. So they had a righteousness. You remember the book of Job? The one young man who finally spoke, and Job had nothing to say to him at all. And he said, Job, it's your self-righteousness you got. That's your problem. He couldn't answer back. And then the Lord spoke to him. That wasn't very pleasant, but nonetheless. So in our world, when that trumpet is sounded, and we are being all gathered together unto the Messiah, Psalms 118 tells you, what is he going to do? Destroy. That's the day the Lord appointed. It's the day in which he said, this is it. And Jerusalem must say, because of the things leading up to that verse in the Psalms 118, leads up to that point, and they will say it. A lot of bad things are going to take place. Remember, he said, I will not come to Jerusalem unless you say that. In the book of Joel. We see there's a war going on. And where does that war begin? Do you remember? No. We're talking down here on this earth. When he comes, is he going to land his feet on the Mount of Olives? Oh, yeah, that's what it says. Okay, wait a bit. Wait, stop. That's not what the book of Joel says. He's going to land his feet in Judea. Well, same thing in Jerusalem, isn't it? No. He conquers and provides and protects Judea first. That's the first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to save Judah. And then I'm going to go to Jerusalem. That's why Jerusalem will say, blessed is he who comes in the name of God. That's what's going to be said. And we're waiting for him to say it now. So get began with, that's not the book of Joel says. He's going to save Judah first. We have a tendency, because we live in the century we live in, that, oh, Jerusalem was a Jewish city. No, it wasn't. Who Who owned the city of Jerusalem? No.
First.
Yahuwah says, that's my city.
Uh-oh.
It belongs to me. That's my town. And you've polluted. Where I placed my name. You have polluted. And so now they have to clean that town up. That city of Jerusalem does not mean it's Jewish. It means it belongs to God. This is where I'm placing my name. When God places his name, does that mean, a fellow Jew, can I live there? I'll pay you rent.
No.
I'll give you some money if I could stay there for a while. What's the charge? No. Why did David pick that city? Why did God even send David to conquer that city? Did he conquer that city because David liked the city? Or do you think that maybe through David, the Creator was saying, I want that place. That's mine. Go take it. And what did David do? He took it. Did David live in Jerusalem? No. He lived in the city of David known as Zion. Solomon lived in the city named Zion. Who was in Jerusalem? The what? The high priest. The high priest lived there. And what's the high priest supposed to represent? The Messiah. So that town, that place, that area, it's not very big. It's only like five miles square. Very small area that belongs to the Son of God. You understand what I'm saying? Or am I kind of lost you? I hope not. So we have this great gathering. And we know it says, Apostle Paul says, we'll be gathered together up into the clouds. And everybody says, oh, that's heaven. Yeah, well, that's true. Clouds are up there in the heavens. I will not deny that. I mean, we have some up there right now. What do you do when you get there? You learn what he wants you to do. And I use the rocks as an example. What did I say? You don't remember. No. That's not what I said. Sorry, what? Okay. Made clean. But you're already up there. Why would you do that for? What do they represent? The 12 tribes. So what's the function? God always has said, it's the house of Jacob first. Right? So in the very first thing is that when you will be taught by the Creator's Son how to teach these people who have gone through a very hellish world, who have gotten now a broken and a contrite spirit, terrified and frightened, responding to the Devarim Elohim's words, and you're going to go down there and you're going to teach them what is right, what is just, and what is holy. You're going to help them to get clean. You're just not being there and says, oh, you hit it. You fool. You should listen to me. No, you know, that won't work, will it? I didn't mean to prolong this chit-chat, but anyway. I hope, so when we think about the Feast of Tabernacles, when I try to bring out the Feast of Tabernacles, yes, we're supposed to have joy, we're supposed to have happiness, we get to dance, because that's what the Torah says. But that's what we're going to give to others. What God has given you, you don't have that in you to give it to anybody else. Who could give it to them? God. Now, I said before, what did Yahshua say to his disciples? Remember the first night I was here? What did I say that he said about his disciples? That's not what I said. I did quote the Messiah, however. Greater works you will do than me. What were they supposed to do? Beat people with a 2x4? Take a cat of nine tails and just whip them like crazy? What were they supposed to do? Teach them what is right, what is just, what is holy. Not damn them in that Gehenna hellfire. You're supposed to teach them what is right, what is holy, what is good. That's what they're supposed to do. Did they do their job?
Yes.
Yes.
You're still doing it.
Now, when you think about the singing and the gathering and the blowing the horn and all this Feast of Tabernacles we have, and everybody's gathered together, we're only in the flesh right now, but when God brings us down, what are we supposed to teach the people? Will the tabernacle, quote, do greater works than the apostles? How can you prove that in the Torah? He said, I'm not quite sure exactly where Zach is, I remember it. The end is greater than the beginning. The end is greater than the beginning. Now, when we end this Feast of Tabernacles, we're going to enter into another thing, aren't we? We're going to enter into the eighth day. Right? I have a message to give you on the eighth day. I hope it can be understood. There is a message on the eighth day. Oh, yes, okay, marriage supper, we got that. But after that has been done, what takes place? How many of you people, now don't ask the question, just think about it. How many of you people went to your own wedding? Was that the only thing you did? Are you sure? You had a big party? Had some champagne, and that's it? What? Why did you get married for?
To live your life together.
Live what? Live life together. With what? The mate. And what are we supposed to do then?
Get on with it.
Build. When you got married, you did not know how to build a marriage. Yep. And there's no book ever written that can tell you how to build a marriage. Because nobody knows how to build a marriage. It's between two people. And guess what the two people have to do?
They have to fight it out.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Figure it out.
That doesn't look like a marriage. It must be his fault. No, it must be her fault. You know? Let's get out the hammer, jam on her. Or jam. No, you got to take it upon yourself. You got to remove the belief system or the concept or the dreams, the wonderful, beautiful Disneyland type like world, right?
I mean, Hollywood's not right in my marriage.
No, Greg, then.
Well, if Hollywood did do that, it is worthless. It's of no value. Nope. It's got to go up the smoke.
You got to take the log out of your own eye before you can take the speck out of your
eye. All right, I understand that point. But you understand what I'm saying? But we're talking about being married to the Messiah. Oh, you could take log out of his eye.
Absolutely not.
You already are righteous. You're not be taking the. What are you going to build?
We're sewing our wedding.
What are you going to build with him?
We're sewing our gown together.
What is it? What is it he's going to do after the eighth day has come to the end, or the wedding supper is over with?
Well, don't you have the white throne?
What's he going to? So I want you to rethink about this. This is not just a end. It's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. If I got it wrong, that's okay. But he said, the end matter will be greater than I started with. Day one. What happened on day one?
God created heaven and earth.
Let there be light. It did not say, I'm going to create light. He just said, in Hebrew it says, light come. And what did light do? It came. And now that's the beginning. Right? Something happened bigger on the second day. And it got bigger on the third day. It got bigger on the fourth day. It got bigger on the fifth day. It got really big on the sixth day. And then comes this wonderful place that says, welcome into my home. Now you're part of my world. This is my day. Come and be where I am at. And we parallel it with the word seventh day, meaning the Sabbath. What does peace mean? Sorry, what? Huh?
Security, she said.
Security. When you use the word shalom, it does not mean have a peaceful day. What does it say in you? This is a safe place to be. Because that's what that word really means. Shabbat means, Shalom Shabbat means, this is the safe place to be. With God.